Welcome to the Blitzbird Podcast with Chris Nicolau from SteelersDepot.com and Dominic Dottola from Pro Football Spot and Steel Curtain. And today's special guest is Rudy Rude Dog Reyes from the Rudy Rude Dog Show.com. Sorry, is that the Rude Dog Show.com?
That's the Rude Dog Show.com.
There you go. Excuse me for that. Today we have a lot of segments to cover here, and we'll cover something along the lines of the QB situation behind Ben first, talking about Landry Jones, Taj Boyd, Bruce Gutkowski. So do either of you want to chime in on what you think of all three and where they stand with the depth chart of the position?
Go ahead, Rudy.
Go ahead, Ben. You're the guest.
Well, you know what, guys? What we have going on here is a quadfecta, as I'd like to call it. Well, Landry Jones coming in, and second-year practice squad quarterback, and Taj Boyd going up head-to-head against him for that third spot. Traditionally, Steelers are not going to keep four quarterbacks. Not that they haven't in the past, but in the most recent memory, probably not going to happen. So I see Taj Boyd and Landry Jones going head-to-head just by the simple fact that yes, Taj Boyd certainly does know how to follow his reads and progressions and when to run. His physicality is matched along with those of Ben Roethlisberger because clearly we know how capable Ben is and has been and hopefully continue to be without any injuries. Taj Boyd has a very similar dynamic to where he knows the pass rush, he knows when to run, he knows when to get rid of it, and if he has a chance to connect to Martavis Bryant, former wide receiver, I really foresee him getting opportunity to strike deep and often like they did when they paired up at Clemson. As far as Gradkowski is concerned, yes, mentally tough Bruce is. I met him last year at Steelers training camp. The guy is solid, definitely someone to contend with as far as the mental aptitude, but certainly not a Ben Roethlisberger-type quarterback inside the pocket, but knows how to play. Obviously, coming from Oakland, where they know how to overpay players, in certain situations, not to say Jamarcus Russell was a complete bust, but I think he's now a tight end somewhere, a practice squad or something. So, you know, clearly there's going to be some battles for that spot. And that's kind of where I see it shaping up. Will Taj Boyd get the nod over Landry Jones? We're going to see. But what's really clear to me is that there's going to be more of a battle against Gradkowski and Taj Boyd upcoming to find out who's going to back up Ben Roethlisberger. But I foresee Gradkowski doing it like he did last year.
Yeah, Dom, I think you have a little different perspective if you want to chime in there.
Yeah, no, not necessarily between Gradkowski being the top backup for Ben. Veteran, he's been around. He can start a game or two for you if something hopefully doesn't, you know, hopefully nothing happens to Ben. But at the same time, he can come in and be your number two. I think they should only be carrying two quarterbacks on the roster to save a roster spot for another position, like an offensive line, like a defensive line, or even an extra inside linebacker if you don't want to, you know, risk sending somebody to the practice squad or actually cut them. It'll be between, again, Jones and Boyd for that third quarterback spot. But I believe since both have practice squad eligibility that cut both and then see who passes through waivers and then you tack one onto the practice squad in case something goes seriously wrong.
I can't foresee anybody picking up Landry Jones. They really know nothing about him. Taj Boyd's a little bit more of a hot commodity because recently drafted. So yeah, it would be interesting to see. What I'll do with the podcast today is I'll just let you guys talk. I'll just direct the show and chime in when necessary. But yeah, I think it's going to be Ben and Bruce, and if they decide to carry a third, it's really up to it's really Jones' spot to lose. I mean, he's been in Pittsburgh for 3 years. He knows the system. Relationships are there. So it's really his spot to lose, and if Taj Boyd can do it, I'll take the better person, the better player.
Right. Any day of the week, Taj Boyd has broken records at Clemson. Yes, the NCAA is a different animal than the NFL. However, when you're talking about understanding defenses, understanding looks that the defense will give you, you got to know when to say when and what to do with the ball when you need to do it. Will Taj Boyd be the heir apparent? That remains to be seen. But I, again, don't foresee Landry Jones. And I have to agree with you, certainly, that it's Landry's job to lose. I really think that Landry could potentially be knotted out over Tosh Boyd's, not only his aptitude, but his physicality, as well as following all of his progressions, which he has done consistently. A Heisman Trophy runner-up, I really foresee him being someone to contend with heading into preseason.
To be fair, though, to Landry Jones, when you're throwing to Sammy Watkins and DeAndre Hopkins and Martavis Bryant, you're likely going to break quite a few NCAA and ACC records.
Yeah, and a little bit of some facts from CBS Sports. In Jones's three games last year in the preseason, he had 44 attempts. He completed 27 of them for 224 yards, zero touchdowns, one pick, and he was sacked six times. So he has that third-team offense in there, the third-team offensive line. So it really hampers what he can do, and it's hard for him to show what he can do with when you're working with the third team. So I'm not, let's say, on the decline about Jones. I mean, when you're working with the third team, you can't expect to be polarizing, if you will.
Right, but you have to think about this as well, is that his ability to practice with those three teams. Look, you're going to get it right in third, you're going to get it right in second, and you're going to get it right in first. Doesn't matter what line you're playing on. If you can't follow your reads, if you can't progress in your throw, it doesn't matter who you're throwing to. You could look absolutely horrible and not have any wide receiver or tight end catch, but at least you're putting it in the general area, not through an interception.
Oh, completely agree. And his pocket awareness is going to really need to drastically improve if he's going to stay on the roster.
Big time. Big time. Mm-hmm. In a very, very big way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the extra point rule that they just implemented. Are you guys for or against it? And if you're for it, or sorry, if you're against it, would you have changed it at all or just let it go? Rudy?
You know what, to be honest with you, there's really no differential. You're looking at a 99.5 to 94%, give or take. To be honest with you, it would have been better off left alone. It was perfectly working. You changed the upright width last year. And I just think that when you're leaving something alone that's working, the results will follow. But once you start messing with extra points and things of that nature, what you're ultimately doing, and I interviewed Jeff Reed recently, what you're really doing is you're taking the kicker out of the equation. You're essentially saying, you know what, let's just throw it. We're 15 yards from the end zone. Let's just convert this to two. So you won't even need a kicker. Will teams take advantage of that dynamic? I really see that happening. As far as kicking that extra point from the 15 instead of the two, to be honest with you, there's really no consequence whatsoever unless the weather is involved. Once the weather's involved, that's a whole nother ball game because now you're kicking in snow. Now you're kicking in rain or sleet or very windy conditions that's known to be kicked on the other end of Heinz Field. Sean Sweason, probably not much of an issue, but I can't speak for other kickers in the NFL. Leave it alone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what they should have done as far as the rule is concerned is move the ball to the one-yard line to try and entice teams to make two-point conversions. But I do like the rule, the new aspect that you can return interceptions or return block kicks for extra points like they have at the college level. I think that's a definite wrinkle that they probably should have added in long ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
agree with that.
Yeah, for sure, because what you're doing is you're opening up more of an explosive possible return. Think about Antonio Brown and the amount of return, if not for touchdowns, returns for excellent field position on the other side of the field. You leave him open for that dynamic, the game will be over a lot sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when extra points happen, I mean, that's the time to get up out of your seat, go to the bathroom, get some chips, talk to some girls, you know, you do your thing. I mean, now I think if you actually look at an extra point, the defense, they're not even trying. They literally just they get up for a second. They do what they do. Now you're going to see teams actually trying to block kicks, make it a little bit more competitive. So I like the rule that they can return it for a touchdown. But I like what Dominic said, bring it up to the one. Let's see some 2-point conversion action, get the games more interesting. So yeah, I agree with you both on with different terms and. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll switch back.
By the way, no, by the way, I'll let you talk to the chicks for me.
Oh, hey, I do what I can. All right. So switching up to the defensive line, and we're going to talk about the defensive line as who do you think will – I know me and Dom will talk about who will make the roster, but we'll kind of touch back on it again. Who will make the roster as far as defensive line only? How many of them, and talk about like each guy and why or why not they're not going to make it. Let's start with Dom here.
All right. Well, you have your starting three, which is probably one of the best starting three you have for a 3-4 unit in the entire NFL with the likes of Hayward, McClendon, and Tuitt. So you're all set there. And then McCullers will likely be your backup nose tackle, see if he can continue to progress and keep himself in good shape. So that's four. And then at defensive end, I'm going to go with them carrying six total. And while I'd love to see LT Walton make it, I think he's probably bound for the practice squad and then will be treated to another year of Cam Thomas and or Robert Gethers or Clifton Gethers, sorry.
I'm going to probably have to piggyback on that to ultimately say you do have those solid three. But don't forget, McClendon last year filled in very nicely for that nose tackle position as he swapped out with McCullers. Everybody was really concerned about McCullers coming in, not having the cardio, not having the footwork. A lot of that has to do with Dick LeBeau as well as Joey Porter's influence in regards to his footwork and how he's been able to make an impact, and he did that against Tennessee. I really, and against Baltimore last year. Respectfully, I really see McCullers being that diversified nose tackle slash run stuffer. He proved that he could do that. He can handle those two-man teams and really push it back into the pocket to try to collapse on any opposing offensive quarterback, as well as the lines that are out there. The only thing that I foresee happening is Chickalo getting that final spot. But I have to agree with you. Even though LT Walton was signed, once Landry Jones, and I'm going on a limb here, once Landry Jones gets released by the Steelers from the practice squad, that opens up that position we were talking about for a defensive player such as LT Walton.
Right. That's a different perspective there, and I appreciate that. That's a good view there. I'm thinking your usual three, like Dom mentioned, with McCullers, and then I'm gonna go, sadly, Cam Thomas and or Clifton Gethers, and then I'm gonna throw in Ethan, Hemer,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw him in. I think he's going to be one of the dark horses. With his limited snaps last year in preseason, he's really effective. So I like his chances. He's been in the system. He can be your Josh Morrow-esque, if you will. And I think that he progresses nicely and becomes that the five tech that you've been looking for that's rotational. So that's what my kind of dark horse is on the defensive line.
Right. Well, you know what? Josh Morrow was a huge loss on that Steelers defense. Even as a practice squad player, he showed up in preseason, as me and you had spoken about earlier. And to be honest with you, one of those guys that is missed as far as developmental players such as Josh Morrow, which I had the pleasure of interviewing last year's draft as well as during training camp. And the guy's solid. He comes from a great family background, great football knowledge. Unfortunately, he left to Arizona playing with the likes of former Steeler Larry Foote. Obviously, Larry's not there anymore as a player, but he's there as a coach. So I'm sure he'll do something there in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, after he was signed off the practice squad, he was on their 53, and because of injuries along Arizona's defensive line, he saw playing time. I mean, it's not like he just rode the bench his entire career there. And then the loss of Nick Williams, who John Mitchell had a lot of high hopes for in terms of what he brought to the table athletically as a former basketball player and, you know, his raw physical tools. I think that was also another, you know, big blow to the depth along the defensive line. I just, you know, I'm really hoping that McClendon, Hayward, to it, and even McCullers, you know, for those for even those running downs, not necessarily in sub packages, but that kind of core four can stay healthy over the course of this season.
Right, right. You know, Kem Hayward, speaking of which, that guy is a gem off the field as well as he is on the field. He really started to develop as that pass rusher, you know, right next to your McClendons and your McCullers on the defensive line. And in that 3-4 technique, he was solid. He got a lot of pressures. He got a lot of hurries on the quarterback, and he was co-sack leader as well, if I'm not mistaken. So Kem Hayward looking for bigger things on that defensive side this year, more so in addition to where he picked up off of last year. So I really foresee him moving further.
Oh, absolutely. And if you think about it, with how unsettled the outside linebacker position is, considering that defensive scheme and what you rely on your outside linebackers to do, getting any pass rush from guys like Hayward and Tuitt, who can do so from the defensive trenches, is really, really important if you're struggling, you know, at left and right outside linebacker to, you know, create that type of pocket collapse.
Right, right, exactly. Well, you know, it's all about the first jump. It's all about the first push. If you can get off that line, get those hands up, get them into your interior offender, your tackle, your guard, you are sure to make a serious impact, even not literally but figuratively, because those guys know that you're there. So just in case you don't get them on the first time around, doesn't mean that you're not going to get it on the second time around, because that's another opportunity to get inside and make your presence known on every down.
Absolutely. And the more you can help guys like Jarvis Jones and Bud Dupree when they're asked to, you know, collapse that pocket, that's just so much better. That's so important.
Right. You know, I was looking at a stat last year in regards to Bud Dupree. Yes, he was the first overall draft pick. That's wonderful, and that's great and everything, and that's what we needed. However, with that being said, a lot of the sacks that he had were from subpar offensive teams. And his defense, the rest of his line, enabled him to get into the backfield. Not to take away from anything Bud Dupree has done or what he will do. However, the lines that he was working against throughout his college tenure were being handled majorly by his defensive line in concert with what he was doing. So it may look like he was a sack master, which made it look relatively easy because he had the guys collectively to make that happen. And he has the tools in Pittsburgh on the defensive line to also get the sacks that he needed. Let's not forget, Arthur Motes is an opportunist. Arthur Motes found his way onto being re-signed by the Steelers this year because he's an opportunist, and he recognized when those balls were out and picked up those fumbles and ran them back for a certain amount of yardage per interception or per fumble recovery. So I can purely see a guy like Bud Dupree taking advantage of players around him, just making him even better, like James Harrison, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And Harrison's just a cyborg. He's for how old he is, he's just an ageless wonder. He just gets after it. And I mean, that Kansas City game was a really good example of how he, you know, showed how much left he has in the tank as far as, you know, as a rotational player. But he was really, really good in that game.
Right, right. You know, one thing about James Harrison is I didn't get a chance. Obviously, he wasn't at training camp last year. And I had always stated something happened with Jarvis Jones. And I'd spoken to Jarvis Jones last year previous to the season going. And I asked Jarvis, Jarvis, are you ready to go? He says, man, I'm ready. And he showed it. He showed it. He learned something from James Harrison during that Carolina game. He lit up that quarterback. He got into the backfield. He did what he was supposed to. He held his name, Sackman Jones, but he learned it from James Harrison. You know, Father Time is undefeated, but James Harrison has been one of those ageless wonders, as you stated, which is actually well said, who's been able to not only show what he can do on the field, but his productivity in the offseason is what keeps him going. So Father Time is undefeated, yes. Will Harrison, you know, obviously retire a Steeler? Yes. Will he be one of the best defensive Steelers to have done on the field? Yes. He'll be up there with the likes of LeVon Kirkland, which I had the pleasure to interview as well. And I really think that Bud Dupree, if winged correctly under James Harrison, will find his way into saying, you know, this Bud's for you when Steelers it's cheering these, you know, sacks and forcing fumbles and causing interceptions and havoc on that opposing offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's going to be interesting just to see how that whole position and outside line. I don't like how we just transitioned from defensive line to outside linebacker, but I mean, how that position just unfolds is going to be really interesting over the coming months.
Right. So talking about the defensive line and McClendon, I want to hear your takes on extending him or not. I mean, if you want to extend him, you know, you had that spot locked up for next maybe 2 years. But if not, you can wait until he fulfills his contract. If he plays well, you extend him. If not, or if McCullers emerges, you have that as a safety net. So do you guys extend him, yes or no, before this season starts?
Rudy? Oh, me? What? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Rudy?
Go ahead, Tom. I got you. Go ahead. Oh, go okay. ahead, Tom.
All right. Well, I was just going to say that, no, you play the waiting game. There are too many other important players on the route, like other important players like Hayward and guys who will probably make more money than McClendon that you have to end up getting locked up. As I said, Hayward is one. Number two, probably Beecham would be on that list as well. And like I said, you'll wait it out. You'll want to re-sign him because when he's healthy, he brings some continuity and he plays, you know, that nose tackle position quite well. Does the anchoring, you know, really been in that system for a long time. Still in his, you know, in his mid-20s, you know, pushing 30. But at the same time, if you can lock him up to like a three-year deal, then that would be a good move. But you can afford to wait with him.
Right. You know, to force yourself as a team to pick up players that still have contracts that are not expiring, for example, Cortez Allen, even get me started on that. But you want to make sure that these guys are putting their absolute best on the field on every down, every snap, every sack, every fumble, every touchdown, every bit and every ounce of effort is given. Don't make the mistake of signing players to these long, lengthy extensions, 5 years, for Cortez Allen, you know, not to say that Cortez may not have a bounce back year, because he very well could. The problem is what you're doing is you're giving these guys a false sense of security. Regardless of what you're paying them, regardless of what their performance is, they're going to try to shine. I'll give you an example of that. Antoine Blake, who filled in more than nicely for Cortez Allen, who just for some reason could not get it right. Will he have the correction? Yes. Will he be working with the likes of Ike Taylor as far as physicality is concerned? Perhaps. I know that, you know, you have a lot of great players who are just waiting to shine. And don't forget the hunger aspect. Everybody forgets about the hunger. These guys need to stay hungry. And it needs to show during preseason. It needs to show during the 53-man. It needs to show during training camp. It needs to show. And you've got to show it, and you have to bring it. You can't make excuses or exceptions. And that's why you let these guys work out their current contract before re-signing them, because it could be a huge mistake and a huge letdown.
Yeah, and it's not like he's Roethlisberger or Hayward where he's on the field on every single play where, you know, they show any sort of awesomeness. You got to get him done right away. You know,
right.
McClendon's an important part of the defense. And, you know, Chris and I, we've talked at length about him, what an underrated asset he is. But at the same time, he's going to have to wait in line, and you'll want to bring him back, and you'll offer him a fair market value contract when the time comes.
Right, right. As long as they make the impact that they need to make.
Oh, absolutely. You know, well, yeah. That, you know, of course, that goes into it. Yeah.
That's automatic.
So what about when his contract was up last time and Green Bay was trying to steal him away? Is that a worry for you guys? You got to think that he would go to Green Bay and start.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily a worry because they tendered him at an undrafted free agent level to where anyone could get him and not have any compensation. They were allowed to match whatever Green Bay offered him. So I'm sure that they would try and match. I don't know if it would be an Al Woods situation where he'd get more money elsewhere, you know, or more guarantees elsewhere. But I want him back.
Yeah, I mean, you may as well keep those players. Now, look, you don't have to worry about players if you build not only their trust, that you build consistency with them as a player and as a person. Look, the ties that I'll go back to Arthur Motes. The ties that Arthur Motes had in Buffalo with contributing to cancer societies, fundraisers, things of that nature. Arthur Motes is a very passionate guy. And Pittsburgh has a lot of great things that could be offered to any given player who's willing to do what they need to do, not only on the field but off the field. The less trouble you get into, the Rooneys love you for it. I mean, Ike Taylor got into no issues whatsoever. On the polar opposite of that, Jeff Reed ripped the towel dispenser off the wall in the restroom because it didn't have enough towels inside of it. I mean, you have your various players that can either make or break their own career based on their on-field and off-field activities. And I think that McClendon is one of those guys that will be re-signed because of what he does off and on the field.
Mm. Yeah, but he'll have his choice after, and it kind of, I don't know, it worries me. He traveled to Green Bay. He definitely had interest elsewhere because the NFL is a business, and that's exactly what it is. So if he's being offered,
Tennessee will offer him something.
Right. Or Arizona.
Yeah, Arizona too, definitely. But Tennessee more so with everybody there now.
Yeah, so it's really worrisome for me. And if you look at his contract now, he's not an expensive guy to keep around. With his age getting up there, and more set package football being played, he's not going to be that expensive. And we have the cap room to resign him. So if you can get all three, which includes Beecham and Hayward, done and still have the room for McClendon, I think you definitely have to get him done. And that may be just me, but he's definitely an important guy in this defense and very underrated.
The injuries, though, they've kind of, the last couple of seasons have kind of
right, and you can play that red flag. Play that, yeah, as a fact into his price.
Or yeah, or you could use it to wait.
Right, or you could use it to wait.
Yeah.
Well, you can also go back to Lamar Woodley's contract, which he's still receiving monies from the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken, for basically, and I think he has like $1 million left that the Steelers are going to pay him this year. I don't know where Woodley landed or if he landed anywhere at all. And
Cardinals.
He's with the Cardinals now? Okay,
yeah.
So yeah.
They signed him to like an $800,000 deal.
Well, that right there is a give or take bet min. Give or take bet min. And the reason why he's being repaid is because the Steelers said, look, you've had too many injuries. Too much sideline action means no production on the field. We can't have that. We can't deal with that. We would rather pay you out and be done with it and bring in some fresh new talent, fresh new legs, just like the secondary. You have Ike Taylor retiring, which needed to happen. You have Troy Polamalu, his untimely, but also a viable choice on his part, and obviously concurred with the Steelers. I mean, the guy's an 8-time Pro Bowler, okay? He's won 2 Super Bowl titles. The guy has done more than enough for the city of Pittsburgh on the field and off the field. It was his choice. Obviously, he's from Southern California, probably not too far away from where I'm at, where he grew up, where he went to Garden Grove High School. But a very solid player, a veteran of all veterans, as far as that Steeler lore is concerned, with the likes of Joe Green and Lambert and so on. But when it comes to fresh legs, needing to get those players in there that really need to make an impact on that defensive line and the secondary, needed to be had. But you don't fit them with quantity players, you fit them with quality players. And I think that's really where they're moving into right now with the average line of that Steelers D, 26 years of age and younger.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I was going to go into next with our next segment is the safety situation, the starters, if you're comfortable with them, and the backups, and if they should address this via free agency next off season, or the draft, or with final cuts. So what do you guys think?
Good, Rudy.
No, it's all you, Dom.
Oh, all right. Well, I was just gonna say, you're bringing back Mike Mitchell, and you're paying him all that money, so you got to see another year of what the heck's to come. Hopefully, the pass rush improves a little because he looked like a competent football player when he was in Carolina, and he had a very nice pass rush and could do the things that he did best. At strong safety, it's Shark Thomas's time to shine with Polamalu out of the fold. They invested 2 draft picks in Thomas, showed some flashes as a rookie in sub packages of what he could do. But looked it up on Football Outsiders for an article I'm actually writing on Pro Football Spot now. He played on 3 defensive snaps last year. That was it for Thomas after logging 189, I believe, during his rookie campaign. So this is a huge make or break season for him. Will Allen, a Tomlin favorite, he's back again as the top backup, of course. But then beyond Allen, then you start, you kind of start getting into, a little bit more murkiness on the depth chart with a lot of unproven guys. Robert Golden will probably be back for some special teams. Gerard Holloman, they drafted in the 7th round, had some nice ball hawking skills, but some definite issues in run support and taking angles and overall tackling at Louisville. And he came out with a year left of eligibility, so I don't know what, you know, they're expecting him to do in year one. And then other guys like Ross Ventrone, a special team stud from last year who they kept on the roster. I believe he ended up going on there and sending Johnson to the practice squad where he was signed away by the Jets. And then guys like Isaiah Lewis and Ian Wilde from the Canadian League.
You know, there's a lot of shorty going on this Steelers line. You know, when you pick up guys like Sean Lemon, who may or may not see time in that Steelers secondary, that remains to be seen. But I know that Ian Wilde, who I had the chance to interview as well, definitely chomping at the bit. The guy's a workhorse. Nothing but accolades from his former coaches as well as teammates. And I can honestly tell you that these guys may be instrumental in time to come, obviously during free agency, and making an impact in this Steelers secondary. I really feel, now Mike Mitchell last year, the reason why Mike, and I know you're not really an opponent of Mike Mitchell, Dom, and I gathered that early. But you know what, to be honest with you, Mike Mitchell was playing with two hurt knees and a groin problem. So as far as his performance is concerned, was he physical on the ball? No. Was he physical on the player after the catch? Yes. Not really agile when you have two hurt knees and maybe a groin pull. You can't expect too much from that to happen. He was warm. Put it this way. Steelers warmed up on the field first. Mike Mitchell did not even come in until probably 30 to 45 minutes after they had already taken the field. He wasn't sure he was going to play. But when I spoke to Mike before training camp, I said, "Are you ready to go?" He says, "Let's do this." So he was on the field. He was warming up, doing light sprints, things of that nature, and ready to do what he had to do. Is he going to be in more of an impact this year? As long as he can remain injury-free, I still think he's going to do something versus nothing, and it's going to be more on the ball with being a lot more physical off the line and not giving these friggin' wide receivers 5, 10, and 15-yard cushions on a bump and run. Stick to them like glue. You're a corner for a reason. If you can't stick to these guys, I'm going to find somebody who can. That's the mentality. And that's basically what it boils down to in the secondary. As far as Will Allen's concerned, I was screaming for Will Allen to get into the game last year. Yeah. After Troy Polamalu had that injury, I said, no, where's Will Allen? Oh, wait, he's on specialty. Get Will Allen in here. And sure enough, here comes Will Allen, fortifying that free safety position. Cortez Allen, I'm not trying to beat the guy up by any stretch of the imagination. I'm only trying to make a point here that when you don't play, you don't produce, you get benched. Very simple. Same thing happened with Ike Taylor. Don't get me started on Ike Taylor either. You now have a very confident Antoine Blake, number 41, last year, who made good, solid plays. Was he lacking during the Baltimore game, headed in the postseason further? Yes. Yes, he was. But this is his first taste of postseason play. So do you really blame him for having the heebie-jeebies and not performing to serious standards? Well, I don't know. You can say yes, you can say no. But when it comes to securing that secondary, you have Holloman, okay, maybe not the biggest guy. Grant, definitely someone to watch out for. Sanquist Golden at 5'8.5", come on. You know, even though he doesn't have the height to make up for it, he's extremely physical, and he's a ball hawk. The guy knows where the ball is going to go, knows how to get to it, and led his team to many, many, many interceptions and touchdowns off of those interceptions. So clearly something to be said for a lot of these guys. Holloman's really got to work on that footwork. He's got to work on it. Otherwise, he's going to find himself being clipboarding under somebody else. And you don't want that to happen, especially when you draft him as high as you did.
Real quick before Dom goes, kind of want to piggyback off what you said. I'm in disagreement with the whole Troy Polamalu goes down, put Will Allen in. I think Will Allen's more of a free safety. I think you put Shark in there, you give him some reps, do something, get him in the game. Let's see what he can do. He needs more than three snaps when you know that your Hall of Famer might be retiring next season or And you got to get Shark in the game. Got to give him some snaps. Will Allen's more of a free safety. If you ask me, he doesn't have the speed to really solidify that strong safety spot. But that's kind of the only disagreement I have there.
Mitchell was hurt as he was claiming to be, you would figure they'd put Will Allen after they signed him, you know, away. They would put him in the game at free safety because some of those were just in.